In the history of rock, there are certain songs that are much more known for the live versions than the studio versions. For instance, did you know that there are studio versions of Bob Seger's Turn the Page and Peter Frampton's Do You Feel Like We Do? Probably never heard them. But they exist. They're there. So on this week's Ludini Rock and Roll Circus podcast, we're going to tell you the stories behind the songs that only seem to be known for their live versions. Get ready to rock out with your talk out. It's the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. Moms and dads, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome. Welcome to the circus. I am your host, Ludini, of the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus, where we come together each week, have a little roundtable discussion about some topic related to rock or metal. That is what we do here. And if you like that kind of thing, you know, go pop over to iTunes, give us a 5-star review, say something nice about us. By the way, Pittsburgh Kevin keeps telling me, and I keep forgetting, we are on YouTube. So go to YouTube, check us out, give us a thumbs up, give us a follow. We're building a tiny audience there.
We'll give them a channel. Let them know the channel, too.
Yes,
so
yeah.
They know Ludini Rock.
The Ludini Rock. No, it's actually under Lou Lombardi.
Okay, see?
Yeah, just under Lou Lombardi. Well, if you go to YouTube and you search Ludini Rock and Roll Circus,
boom,
there aren't too many. There aren't too many of those other than our show.
Okay.
But yeah, so check us out on YouTube as well. Speaking of the internet, please go to rockrageradio.com, download the app. We are a featured show on Rock Rage Radio. We're very happy about that. We love doing that. So check that out, rockrageradio.com, download the app. Our websites are ludinirockandrollcircus.com, which is constantly being updated with all kind of cool stuff and offers and things like that, and lulombardimusic.com, so check all that out. And I want to give a shout-out to my brother, Chris Thunderwolf Dodson. He has Wolf's Customs, and they do amazing painting, refinishing, custom finishing of musical instruments. They do an awesome job. Please go to the website. It is wolfscustoms.online. They've got some great stuff there. Go and check it out for yourself. We're like a quartet tonight.
Ooh.
We're beyond the power trio. We have grown. We're like the Rolling Stones adding, what's his name on the piano?
Who?
Chuck Lavelle.
Oh.
Or that, one of those, Reese Winans joining Double Trouble.
Sure.
You know, he didn't call it Triple Trouble. You notice Double Trouble, even though Reese Winans came in. But, we have Keith the Hawk Hawkins back after a long hiatus. Keith was in Africa studying, like, the rhythms of the tribes. He's been touring all over for the past few months, but now he's back.
Wow.
And he's gonna write a thesis on it, and then he's going to open a school down there in New Orleans to teach people how to play these rhythms. That's pretty cool.
I've actually been working on being a life coach, where I'm helping people not become their parents' homeowners. Because you know why? Because you know what? You woke up early. Nobody cares. just like Dr. Rick, who's my new hero. Doesn't really exist, but those commercials are funny.
For those of you who watch television, those commercials are funny. Anyway, so we got the Hawk here. We have Lily V6.
What's up?
Speaking of Rock Rage Radio. And Lily, you did some fun stuff this week, didn't you?
I did. I actually went to the Steel Man movie premiere yesterday, which I am in, and it's...
With a porn star.
It's not that.
But you said there was a porn star.
There is a porn star in it.
That's what I meant.
And there's a nude scene in it, which stars me.
What?
But it was really good. We just saw the director's cut, so it was long, but it's hysterical. They just got to fix the sound for DVD sales. But it was fun. That's what I did. Good times.
Nice. Wow. Naked Lily.
Yeah.
And we also have the irrepressible...
Yeah.
The irrepressible.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh Kevin.
Wow. Nice sound effect.
That's a good one.
Hi, everybody.
So we are talking about the songs that are best known as live, for the live version. And there's a lot more than you think. I was going, oh, yeah, that's right. That song, oh, I forgot. Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, it was like kind of one of those things as I was kind of looking stuff up this week. So I tell you what, since we have not heard from our brother in several months, he's been on safari. Why don't we start with you, Mr. Hawk?
You're up. Ever hear this song? It's called I Want You to Want Me.
Yeah.
By Cheap Trick. Everybody knows that live version, but if you listen to the studio version, not that happening. But once the great Bunny Carlos kicks off the drum cadence in the beginning, mm-hmm, the rest is history, man. I'm live from Budokan. That's the only version that people know. I don't even know if people really even know there isn't a studio version exists.
That's
but
a good thing.
There is. But the live of Budokan will live on forever in the infamy of classic rock radio. Probably a little too much, but at the same time, it's still there for your consumption, and it is just a little bit of that Rockford, Illinois rock and roll from Cheap Trick, who I think is a band that I've probably started to appreciate more later in life. I could probably give a shit about them earlier on, but they have good stuff, and they've been around, and they're still rolling. But that's probably their biggest tune. You know, everybody knows that one, but they know the live version of it, and that is a really good version. It's one of the best, you know, supposedly live albums of all time. I mean, it's got a lot of energy to it. I mean, Rick Nielsen takes his time when his guitar solos. And probably, you know, if you like guitar solos, that's a song for you, because it just goes on and on and on. So, but that's the Cheap Trick, I think, is one of those ones. Like I said, I don't even know if people know there is a studio version, but there is somewhere. So.
Live at Budokan. It was written by Cheap Trick's guitarist Rick Nielsen, recorded for their 77 self-titled debut album, but it didn't make the cut. The song was included on their second album, In Color, which was released later in 77. Robin Zander never really liked the song. They all sort of thought it was a kind of a hokey pop song, and they just really... one of the reasons why the studio version is kind of meh is because they were kind of meh when they played at the studio.
Yeah.
But when they started playing it live, like, they were getting into it and rocking it a lot harder, and the arrangement changed a little bit. And so by the time they do the live at Budokan thing, it becomes the thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just absolutely...
signature song.
Yeah, absolutely. It is their signature song.
And the studio version is blah.
It's very flat.
Yeah.
And it didn't even chart in the United States, which is why they... have the Budokan live album, because they were huge in Japan and other countries. So it was a way better. It's more fun to hear the crowd in the song,
mm-hmm,
and their energy on the song's way higher than in the studio version, which I do have, and I've heard it, and it sucks.
Yeah. Every once in a while, some DJ will, whip it out, and you can see. Something that you may not know... about Budokan, which is I didn't realize it's an actual temple in Tokyo, and it's a big deal for them playing there because Japanese citizens felt the temple was sacred and not appropriate for rock concerts.
But they were charming,
obviously the younger generation won out on that.
It's a cheap trick. It's a cheap trick. It's okay. Thank you very much.
We like a cheap trick very much.
Oh, thank you. Well, I want you to run me.
Also, one of the few songs that starts with the chorus, too.
So that's always
an interesting fact.
But that kind of answers your question earlier. We were talking before the podcast. Why are some live songs better than the studio? We just answered this one.
Well, for this particular song, yeah, I think, mm-hmm, there's going to be other reasons for other songs. you were talking about cover versions. Well, someone mentioned cover versions of it. But have you heard Dwight Yoakam's version of it?
Nah, he does some cool covers, though. I mean, I've played Little Sister in a band about 100 times. I haven't played it recently. Dwight Yoakam's one of them. He's a good actor, too, man, actually. But he's like one of them laid-back country dudes. I think he's probably always high. And he's got a cool vibe to him.
Yeah, but he has a cool version. He does a real cool version of this. Mm-hmm. If you pull it up on YouTube.
I mean even on Live at Budokan is known for, too, is the... epic version of Ain't That a Shame, which is like got a drum, got a drum solo in the beginning, and it's, you know,
that can
it's
be like that can be on the list too. That, I mean,
we, that's what I mean. That could be like the two birds with one thing. So I don't mean to, like, you know, take two turns, but it's been a while since I've been on. So.
I've got an artist with twice on my list too. But yeah, cool, man. That's a great pick, Keith. Great pick. Lily, what do you got?
I'll go with an obvious one. Okay.
Thank you, Captain Obvious.
Wow, there it is. I'm going to go with Fleetwood Mac's Landslide.
Oh.
From the 1997's The Dance. Stevie Nicks wrote Landslide just before she and Buckingham joined Fleetwood Mac. That's the band that made them famous, obviously. Song appeared on the band's 1975 release featuring hopeful delivery of the lines. Time makes you bolder, children get older, blah, blah, blah. More than 20 years later, Landslide resurged at the band's release of the live version on 1997's The Dance. The passage of a few decades shifts the song's meaning completely because now Nick's perspective from the older woman looking back on her life made it all more poignant by the fact that she's accompanied by an acoustic guitar by her lost love, Buckingham. In the video, Buckingham barely holds back tears as the two reconnect on stage. It's been covered by Smashing Pumpkins, Dixie Chicks, and even the cast of Glee. Nothing can match the live version, I think. This is the one on my entire list that I've never seen live. I have seen all the other bands live. Would have loved to. Probably not going to do that now. She says the song's about her father. Right. She says the song's about her dad, but later on we think it's about their relationship.
What's going on there?
Yeah, it was about, she said, yeah, about her father. But wasn't this written and it was to be included on Rumors, but didn't make it? This is yeah.
Oh, really? Because I know Silver Springs did not make it on all.
I'm sorry. It's Silver Springs. I beg your pardon. You were absolutely right, Kevin. It was Silver Springs.
Actually, there
were one of those tunes that she actually says at the beginning, it might be Landslide. It says, "This is for you, Daddy." So that's pretty much it. Let's he was talking to Lindsay, you know, giving the old, "Hey, this is
come here, Daddy. This is for you, Daddy."
Wait, you know, they did have a thing for a while, so wink, wink, Daddy, this is for you.
Wink, wink, Daddy.
And she did look back wink. At Mick, though.
Ooh. Wink, wink, Daddy. Who's your winky daddy?
Yeah, when I see the, sometimes, the generosity of women never ceases to amaze me, sometimes with these women that just get these guys. Because Mick Fleetwood, if you look at him, is just not an attractive man. What are you going to do? Even in prison, I would have passed him over, you know what I mean? So it's just... Good drummer. Seems like a nice guy, but, you know, not an attractive man. But hey, you know, Stevie
I kind of feel like, yes, it might have started out as dad, but now that she's been in the, might be about Buckingham.
It
might be about Mick. Yeah.
The live version. you know, it was a VH1 concert, which I watched, and that is one guitar. Guys, go really listen to it. It sounds like two guitarists. That is one guitar, him playing live. He's playing the bass line. He's playing the chords. And then when he goes to play the solo, the chords and the bass line are still going, and he's playing the solo. Like, that's what a badass Lindsey Buckingham is.
He is probably one of the most – we've had that on this discussion on the show before many moons ago. Underrated guitar players. He is my number one choice. With people that don't think about guitar gods, you never hear Lindsey Buckingham's name. The dude can straight up play. Great songwriter, great singer. Man, he got all his bases covered. Gets chicks. I mean, come on, man. He got it all.
He's got it all.
He's checking all the boxes at Lindsey Buckingham, I think. And I guarantee one day, Fleetwood Mac will come running back, man. They'll come crawling back for the Linz.
Yeah. They're musicality is they were in the tradition of Crosby's. They did for the 70s kind of what Crosby, Stills, Nash did for the 60s, you know, just with those amazing harmonies and these like really thoughtful songs, like really, like, you know, just really kind of like grabbed you, you know, what can you say? I mean, I guess there's people that say that it's not heavy rock enough or whatever, but man, I mean, that's some great music. Who's next? Kevin.
I'm Kevin.
Let's bring Kevin.
Two K's.
That would be Kevin. I'm Keith. You Lou. Big Tree.
So I'm gonna go way back. I'm gonna go in the way back machine there, Mr. Peabody, and I'm gonna go with Folsom Prison Blues. What do you think of that?
Never
that's
heard
a
of
good
it.
One.
What, Lou? Lou, there was this guy. His name was Johnny Cash.
Hello, I'm Johnny Cash.
There you go.
That's how we are. Oh. Got Folsom that from what was you selling? Vacuum cleaners or something?
Hello.
Hello. I have a Kirby vacuum cleaner.
What? That was his day job. So Folsom Prison Blues is a song by American songwriter Johnny Cash, as I have mentioned. It was written in 1953.
Wow. Jesus.
Yeah, and first recorded in 1955 for his debut studio album, Johnny Cash, with his hot and blue guitar. Do you think it was really blue?
Like sad.
It was
just blue.
Oh, I never made the connection.
Right.
Wow. Ain't that something? It was the album's 11th track. The song combines elements from two popular folk styles, the train song and the prison song. Yeah, there you go. So
it's
like
a prison train.
It's
like a prane.
It's a prane.
It's a prane song.
Right. So Johnny performed the song live to a crowd of inmates at Folsom State Prison. Talk about a captive audience. Thank you very much. That was 1968, released through Columbia Records. This version became number... What was that?
That was a little late. I wanted to do it after you made that really bad dad joke. But go ahead.
What are you going
to
do?
I'll wait for you to make another bad joke, and then I'll play
something. Okay, get your finger on that button. That's what she
get
said.
Get ready.
Okay, I'm not going to do any. The pressure's on me. So this version became a number one hit in the country charts and reached number 32 on the Billboard Hot 100 back in 1968. So yeah, this is another one where I don't think I've ever heard the studio version of this song. I've only heard the live version.
Yeah. I'm sure it exists somewhere. I would be honest with you, man. I listen to a lot of stuff myself, as you know, and I never heard it either. So it's a mystery.
Wow.
One of the memorable guitar solos of all time.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't say it was good guitar solo. I said it was one of the most memorable.
It is, it is what it is. I mean, basically, he's up there as a kind of three-piece rock band.
Yeah.
It's guitar, bass, and drums. He's strumming a little bit of acoustic.
The weird thing is, when they left the prison, it was a five-piece band. Go figure.
You didn't even do it.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
I'm going to have to wink at you.
I'm sorry.
What the? We're going to get our signals
crossed. And I don't
get
the joke.
Well, because they came in as only three, but then they left as five. See, prisoners escaped.
Wow.
That's why he didn't do the bike.
Yeah, that's what that joke is.
God.
Perfect sound of it, because that's what that joke was.
Kids,
did anybody else
timing.
Out there get that joke? Nobody got that joke.
No, Lily did. She chuckled under her breath.
This is an inexcuse for a podcast.
It is an excuse.
Keith, come on, you need to bring some order to
come
this disaster.
Keith.
Hey man, it's my first day, man. You know, I'm trying to learn what you guys are about and like to try to feel it out and to see where, trying to find my own way in this whole, you know.
You can find your own way
in this journey they call life.
Okay, I'm gonna pick a song because I have like 20 on my list. I can't do 20 because there's other people here and they have to go too.
You can do 20.
But I freaking love this song. And there is a studio version that they do play once in a while. But man, it just does not have the energy of the live version of Great White Buffalo.
Ooh,
freaking live version of that is just, he's on fire, man. Like, it's like, you know, it feels like he's going to like catch the speakers on fire. It's crazy. Became a staple of his live set. There's another song by Thin Lizzy that has the same theme about this, this sort of, Buffalo theme. Sweaty Teddy, mm-hmm. Big admirer of Native American culture. One of the hallmarks of his lifestyle is hunting his dinner with a bow and arrow. Ted has never been your regular rock star.
You don't say.
Makes a cogent argument in the song about the need to respect animals. It's a kind of a political song,
right?
From Ted Nugent. Like,
well, from you never go to the shows, they're super political.
Yeah, but I mean, like, usually it's like right wing politics. This is a kind of tree huggery mm-hmm. kind of thing. You know what I mean? This is when he was singing songs like Wang Dang Sweet Poon Tang. So, like, you know, this was a big step for him.
It was him giving back.
You know, I mean, he has such intellectual songs like Wang Dang Sweet Poon Tang or Wango Tango, or anything with the word Wang in it we can have. But let's also write a song about this.
He just wanted to do that.
Let's also write a song about the play of the American Indian or of Brave White Buffaloes. Because he only took what they needed, man. That's all.
Yeah. Some skins for a roof.
I don't even know what the studio version sounds like. I've heard the live
version. It's just too much. It's very laid back. Like it's just you know, the live version just is like, oh, this is what the song is supposed to be. Originally appeared on Tooth, Fang, and Claw, the seventh and final album from Nugent's group, the Amboy Dukes. Nugent went solo after the album's release and issued a steady stream of albums that sold very well throughout the 70s as he built up his repertoire with the hits like Stranglehold and Cat Scratch Fever. Great White Buffalo, ignored for the most part, was when it was first released, found new life and became a rock radio favorite. June 74, credited as the writer on the track, shares credit for the arrangement with Amboy Dukes bass player Bob Grange. According to Nugent, the riff came to him while he was tuning up his guitar. They captured it on tape and quickly recorded a song with Nugent writing the lyric on the spot. So this could be the reason why, like, the live version is, like, sounds so much better, because, you know, they did it quickly maybe in the studio, but then they start playing it live, and they're kind of, you know, Keith, right? You know, when you're playing something in a band live, it kind of evolves over time, you know? I'm sure you've noticed that with your band. You know, the arrangement starts out one way, then one night Orlando does something a little bit different and you hit something, and then before you know it, the song kind of like evolves. And I think that's what happened.
That happened Saturday, actually, but I was more from too much whiskey more than just an actual magical moment on stage. It happens when you play five beats a measure when it's supposed to be four, and it flips me around. That's a little bit. If you're going to tell me that shit, when it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of that, I just have to, you'll appreciate this, Keith. I played with this drummer in the 80s, and we played in this country band together. And we would get really bored because the music was so kind of like that. And we'd be playing these Crying in Your Beer songs, and these people like dressed in cowboy hats and stuff would be slow dancing. I mean, hey, these people all came out like it was the real thing. You know, we were playing freaking South Park and they're out there like, you know, it's freaking, you know, anyways. And so I'd be like, Kevin, throw in a measure of five. So there'd be like some song that they're all trying to slow dance to. There's a tear in my beer, 4, 5, 1, 2. And like, you just would look on people's faces. And sometimes they wouldn't know what happened. They just know that they got fucked up.
Something's wrong.
And yeah, they would like kind of stumble for us. Dude, it was the funniest fucking thing ever. We would be crying. We'd be laughing so hard. Oh, it was awesome.
Mm-hmm. Wait, you would play 5/4 time signature?
Just in one
bed.
He would just throw in a measure of five, just in one measure. So people would be like, they would literally, like, a lot of times they would be trying to dance, they would literally stumble. It was crazy.
Sick,
yeah, that's what I'm like.
That's a sick, twisted thing you just said. Yeah.
What would you say?
That's a very sick, twisted thing, yeah. Dude, that
kind of screwed up the whole vibe.
I mean, us cowboys were talking about that shit for years, probably. And it was all, you know, they just went home thinking that the band just messed up a lot tonight. I don't know what was happening there. That one song, it just kept messing up.
It was like, what's going on here? They would like look like they did not know what happened. Like somebody slapped them, you know? It was crazy. Anyways, Keith, it's your turn.
I'm going to follow up with a tune that I don't even know if there is a live version, but I know this version. I know it's Bob Seger Turn the Page. Which is the only version I've ever heard. Is there a live? Is there
There's
a studio version?
Yes,
of
there
song?
Is. Yes, there
I
is.
I would think that there are every one of these have a studio version hiding somewhere, but I've never heard the studio version of the song. I know it became even more popular when Metallica covered it, so it's been around. And I think the song was written in the early 70s, to be honest with you. I think it was from the album Live Bullet, if I'm not mistaken. My backstory is probably not that good tonight, but what are you going to do? I've drank a lot of cough syrup today. I might be rocking the good, actually.
So
cool. I'm a little slow today. Sorry. But yeah, this song is the only version I know of this song. I'm going to have to investigate the studio version, but songs about, you know, tales of being on the road and road weary. And it's just that very, if you've ever been in any kind of situation, whether you're famous or not, everybody starts out doing that road thing, man. If you're on tour or just even playing locally where you're jumping from venue to venue, man, every once in a while you'd hit that wall where you're just like, man, this is, I don't know if this is everything it's cracked up to be, but you still do it. But it's a song about the hardships of tour life, man. And it's, like I said, a very relatable song to a lot of musicians, but it's just a song I think a lot of people can just, hopefully the average person can even wrap their head around. And it's, like I said, it's a 40 plus year old song at this point, because I think it came out in 72. So you're looking at a song that's freaking older than me. And that's getting up there.
The name of the album is Back in 72, which came out in 1973.
How about that? That's not Live Bullet. Okay, I read the wrong thing.
No, you're right. It's on Live, but I'm talking about the studio version.
Yeah, yeah, I've never even heard it, so I'd have to really go and kind of like check it out. I'm sure it's not.
It's weird, Keith. It's got a kind of like intimate kind of sound. It's not that it doesn't work, but the song screams for like a live version. Just the vibe of it, mm-hmm. and what the subject matter and everything, right. like doing that song live, you could just like, right. it needs to be done live. That's like, it's just kind of begging for that. So the studio version is weird. It's not weird, but it's like, it's very different. Like just the vibe of it. And it's real. It's not like a lot of reverb on it. You know what I mean? It's real kind of intimate kind of sounding. It's cool, but it's like a kind of a novelty thing. Every once in a great while, some radio station will just play it, you know. I know, like classic vinyl or deep tracks on Sirius, will every once in a while we'll throw that on. And it's like kind of, oh, that's interesting. But the live version, is the, absolutely, just begs for live. He wrote it on the road. He said the only two songs he ever wrote on the road were that one and Night Moves.
Hmm.
He doesn't typically work that way.
I thought it would be a distraction.
Yeah,
it's funny because even the Metallica version. You remember when Metallica put that cover tune out? They made this really like controversial video that MTV banned. It was completely different. Like the lyrics matched up with it, but it was like their vision of it was different. And if you check out, this video was taken off MTV because it was about like a stripper that got beat up by John, and then she was living in a hotel room. It was really a disturbing video, and MTV I think played it like for like a week, and then they were like got so much hate mail and all these people going, what the hell are you playing here? They would show the whole version. Oh, you probably find it on YouTube.
That's all it's gotta be. Yeah.
It's really freaking disturbing, and it's like, man, Metallica just were just trying to push buttons there. But yeah, their vision of it was completely different than the actual song, but it was kind of it was interesting, but it was that was a graphic video, man. It was very disturbing.
I can't say that I've seen it. Now that you say that, I want to say that I remember hearing something about it, but I just could be, because
if I could find it, I'll send it in like a group thing. I've seen it, and like I said, MTV pulled it really fast because they were getting so much backlash from it. It was like, and it was a long video. It was like almost over. It was like 7 or 8 minutes long, which for a video, shit, man. The average song's 4 minutes long. I mean, this is because it was adding a lot of like these interview scenes. It was almost like a mini documentary about a hooker. it was just a disturbing video, but like I said, it didn't last real long. But it's just their vision of it was a lot different. But I think that song just has lasted a long time because it is such a great, well written song.
Yeah.
But
it really captures that, even if you're not a rock star, you kind of feel like one. When you sing along to the mm-hmm. song, you're kind of like, yeah, man.
I get it.
When you're strung out from the road and you feel the eyes upon you as you're shaking off the cold, you pretend it doesn't bother you, mm-hmm. but just want to explode. Mm-hmm. And we were like, yeah.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
I get it.
I'm totally down with it. I'm also down with like, thinking about sometimes where I just like kick back and I go, I'm a cowboy on a steel horse. I'm wanted, dead or alive, which I think I could write a song to that, and I'm going to start and pen that tonight, I think.
Yeah.
I'm start writing poetry, and I think that's going to be my first poem.
Really?
It's going to be awesome.
Please,
I'll tell you when it's on the... It's going to be on the Amazon bestseller list, I'm sure.
Anyway, so... But great song. original version from back in 72 than the version we all know and love from Live Bullet. Also, I think this live stuff, with the exception of a couple things, like the Johnny Cash thing and everything, mm-hmm. I think we're going to find that most of these songs are 70s or 70s-ish.
Legit.
Well, yeah,
There's some, mm-hmm. because the live album was the thing in the 70s. That was the business. What I mean? That was like, yeah. you know, and everybody was wanting to hear live albums. It was just a thing. Lily V6.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and read some comments real quick.
Oh, yes.
While we're comments. Halfway there.
Yeah, we are halfway.
So we have Chris Thunderwolf is watching with Chris. Raven. Mark Christian Jones said Thin Lizzy's Me and the Boys exists only in live versions.
Interesting.
Which now I will have to look that up. And well, the one I'm going to talk about next is probably the most obvious one on the list. Well, one of the two most obvious is Freebird by Skynyrd.
There's a live
version. I got to go to the bathroom. Hold on.
you might as well just
Wait. Oh, Nurse.
Good. Wow.
Can you remove this catheter, please?
Nurse.
Sometimes I like it when I call a waitress nurse. So does my wife. Never mind. Here you go. Can I have another drink?
I call a waitress nurse.
Get these goddamn freakies out of here. Yes, sir. Don't jump up here. Come on, you're my girl. I'm on. This is airtime, man.
Anyway, it's the song first featured on the band's debut album in 73 has been included on subsequent albums. Released as a single in 74, it enters the Billboard Hot 100 in November. Of the same year, came the band's second top 40 hit, and it is their signature song, played during the finale, during their live performances, and is the longest song, often going well over 14 minutes when played. It is included in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame's 500 songs that shaped rock and roll at number 193. In 2009, it was named the 26th best hard rock song of all time. The song has been covered countless times. Among the most notable is a version by American dance pop group Will to Power, who created a medley of the song, and the 1976 Peter Frampton song Baby I Love Your Way in 1988, titled Baby I Love Your Way / Freebird Medley. Mm-hmm. Song spent 1 week at number one on the Billboard Hot 100 chart. It began as a ballad without the guitar solos at the end. Skynyrd recorded it that way for the first time in 72. Alan Collins had been working on the song on and off for the next couple of years. At the time of recording, the song was only 7.5 minutes long. But throughout the next year, Collins continued to refine the song until it was recorded for the final cut. And this one I've seen, this band I've seen countless times, so I've heard it's always the last song. And it's nice. It just gets, you know, this is about halfway through, I go and get my beer before I have to leave.
I'll be back in time.
I'll be back in time before we got to get back to the car. Mm-hmm. It's fine. I got time.
I guess it would be kind of an experience to actually see Lynyrd Skynyrd themselves play Freebird, like be there live for it.
Right.
Do you ever see, anybody here ever seen Freebird, the movie?
Yes. Yes.
And that's England. That's not in America.
Oh, because he's got the Bobby.
That's in England. Dude, this like, when I first saw it, I didn't realize that. And it's like, I'm thinking these are just a bunch of hillbillies.
Wow.
They're like British hillbillies. They were big overseas. People forget that. People think they're because Southern rock is associated with like rednecks and everything so much nowadays. But like that was a worldwide phenomenon. You know, they played, they toured the world.
Wow. I never made the connection. Thanks, Mr. Obvious.
Oh, it's a magical sound.
Wow.
I wish I had glitter.
I wish I had glitter too, because it would hit Lou.
No,
I'm
not like that.
Oh, thanks. There you go.
That girl that was on that Metallica video probably glitter on her.
I mean, no doubt.
I betcha.
In places she didn't want it.
What? There's no place you don't want glitter.
There is.
That is true.
If you want glitter, you want glitter. Hey, speaking of glitter, get a hold of Chris Thunderwolf Dodson at wolfcustoms.online. Get a glitter finish on your guitar.
Ooh.
Yes. Yeah, see, I squeegeed that in there.
Yeah. Man, you are smooth.
I love when you say
squeegee.
I'm
smooth.
As long as we don't have to be involved with Gary Glitter, we're all right.
Nobody wants to be involved with him.
No. But I like Gary Glitter.
Of course you do.
He was so shiny.
I'm sure you do.
He was so shiny.
Mm-hmm.
Shiny, happy glitter.
Sometimes he makes me go, hey. The more you know. I don't think that was right.
Close.
That was close.
Oh, no, you didn't.
I did. Oh, Lordy Jesus.
Okay, so let's do, who's next?
It's me.
That guy.
Hey, guess what? It's me.
It's The blowing man, Pittsburgh, blowing Kevin.
The man behind the curtain. The accent.
The man behind the curtain.
Is there any reason? I mean, not I'm just, you know, I just talk out of turn or anything. Is there any reason why he's not on the camera? We can't. I can't see him. Or am I?
Who's embarrassed of me?
It's more fun than mystery.
I know, right?
I feel
he
like
could
I'm
be anybody. Know,
that could be anybody. Yeah, I could be a little Asian dude.
That could be Fred Durst back there. You wouldn't know.
Or Fred Durst, either or. Yeah.
It's a part of the mystique.
Lou,
Louie, Lou. Lou, hey, Lou.
If it was Fred Durst, I would.
Hi.
If it was Fred Durst, I would shake his hand because I was like, Fred, congratulations, man. Because how someone that just untalented as you got famous, I have no idea.
Lou,
Fred Durst might have pulled the biggest fast one in the history of rock and roll.
They're back, dude. Lou? They're back. They're touring.
Oh, Lou? Christ.
Oh, so what are you gonna say, Pittsburgh, Kevin? What do you got,
Lou?
Yeah.
If you ever find yourself in the Rocky Mountains and the snow's flying and the wind's coming up, you got to keep each other warm, keep the group together, and always keep
riding the storm out.
There you go. What? You okay there, Keith?
Riding the storm out.
Once I hear an REO Speedwagon song, it just triggers my, like, my mullet's growing right now a little bit.
Oh, I saw that.
It looks nice, it's, by the way.
Good. I feel like you can rock it.
Yeah.
I did back in the day, but I don't think I can do it now.
I think you can. Bring it back.
I might try it. I don't know. Because
I had a massive mullet. You've seen the picture.
I've seen it. Uh-huh. You had the most beautiful mullet ever.
Absolutely, man.
Now you just got the most beautiful head.
I got beautiful head.
Beautiful. Look at that.
Smooth. It's so pretty.
Your head is nice and smooth.
It's smooth. It feels so nice, man. How come I got to go feel so nice?
I mean,
ooh, that feel nice, too.
It's the one thing. Sometimes I wake up in an obnoxious mood where I'd like to go up to a bald guy and be like, wax on, wax off. That's, you know, it's kind of that kind of thing. Where's the, is this a new feature? Who's running the controls here on this?
It's Lou. Oh, it's, I'm, yeah.
I got toys.
He's got toys.
He's got new things to play with.
I got new things. This is going to be on this keyboard soon. And I'm going to put it over there. Kevin's going to do it.
Oh, Lord.
So what do you got?
All right. So Riding the Storm Out, right. REO Speedwagon. It's off their third studio album, which is titled Riding the Storm Out.
You don't say.
Yeah, released in 1973. Now, here's my theory. Like, 9 times out of 10, if you hear the song on the radio, it's going to be the live version. And I think it's because the studio version is sung by Mike Murphy.
Yeah, different guitar, different singer, yeah.
Different singer. Yeah. And Mike has, to me, Mike has a very country feel.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm
yeah,
like,
yeah, he has a kind of, there's a kind of country thing going on with the vocals on that.
Right, right.
Every once in a while, one of those stations will play. I heard it once.
Yeah,
I was like, damn.
This?
First it starts out, feels a little slow, and I'm like, what's going on here? And then the different singer kicks in, and you're like, what?
Mm.
What?
Exactly.
Yeah, that version I've heard before. Yeah, it's way different. Yeah, it's definitely a more different, way different voice, man.
Yeah, the song refers to the band being stuck in a harsh winter blizzard after a show in Boulder, Colorado. The bar that they were stuck in is Togari's. It's now closed, Lou, so we can't go.
I'm so glad I'm next because you're going to love what I'm going to talk about.
Okay, all right. But let's talk about the one that everybody hears. Now, this is off the album You Get What You Play For. Right. Came out in 1977, and that's all I got. I'm just kidding. The song Riding the Storm Out, the live version, reached 94 in Billboard's Hot 100 chart, but has since become a classic rock staple. The album went platinum December 14th, 1978. So yeah, 9 times out of 10, if you're going to hear that song, it's going to be the live version from the live album.
Okay, I'm just going to mention this real quick because I know Keith's losing his mind over REO Speedwagon.
Sorry, Keith.
But this goes right off yours.
I don't know why you got to do that.
I thought you might have this song I'm going to say.
Okay.
But it's another REO Speedwagon that's only known as the live version. 157
Riverside Avenue.
That's right. And I don't know a studio version of that song.
I don't think I know one either.
And, I mean, that was a huge...
Huge.
Oh, this is a song that was recorded with a different singer as well, but we all know the live version with Kevin Cronin. So, 157 Riverside Avenue, Regis on the bass guitar. And then him and Gary Richrath do the play off each
Nobody
other.
Nobody talks like a guitar like Gary does.
Yeah. See, call me up one day.
And I've heard multiple versions of that story, too, where Gary interrupts Kevin and his woman. But
it's a really fun like rock shuffle kind of song, if you've never heard it, but it is, they're really, I don't even know if there is a studio version. Well, no, this year, it says it was released in 1971 as with Terry Lutrell. Remember when they very first started, they farted around with different singers in the beginning.
Right, yeah.
So it was a thing. But anyways, yeah, so it's a kind of a two-for-one there, with the REO Chuck Wagon. Okay, we are good on time. Keith.
Yo.
It's your turn.
Oh, sorry.
I took a break while we talked about RSB Wagon, but...
I actually fell. I'm up now. You know what? I'm going to go a little bit off out of the grain here, against the grain, I guess. We're going to go with one that I think gets played just as much as the studio track, and I'm going to go with Tom Petty's Breakdown. It's a longer track, and I hear it a lot, and I hear just as much as the studio, just as much as the studio record, especially on like Sirius, where he goes into that long kind of like tirade at the end where he kind of flips out. I think he even knocks the mic stand over. He must have been having a bad day. But you don't really hear that much. You just don't get that much emotion out of Tom Petty, but he was pissed off that day, and he was really starting to find his groove, and just he went off, and it was just a different version of the song. I don't know exactly, like I said, my backstory sucked, but I don't know exactly what, if it's off a record, but I hear, like I said, I hear just as much as the studio version. And it's, like I said, it's got the same arrangement, just a longer, kind of more broke down version of it. So it's a great song, but it's one of the ones I hear quite often. Mm-hmm. But I still hear the studio version a lot too. So it's kind of like one of those ones that's a toss up, you know. So, and they're both good. So, I mean, either one.
Yeah, it's so much fun because, like you said, he starts off his little speech and he's real calm, cool, and collected. By the end, he's just.
Yeah, he flips out. Mm-hmm. I'm glad somebody else heard that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So yeah, it's a great version.
Oh, yeah, you know, it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they incorporate, when they play it live, they incorporate Hit the Road Jack.
That's fun.
Yes. Yes, I've heard versions. Yes.
It was originally written and recorded for the band's debut album. Initially, the song had lead guitarist Mike Campbell with a distinct guitar lick being played only near at the end of the song. So that great guitar riff, da-da-da-da-da, that was just at the very end. Right. They weren't. While playing it back one night, Tom Petty and Dwight Twilley, a friend of Phil Seymour, were in the studio, and Twilley enjoyed it. He suggested that the lick should be used throughout the song. Petty obliged. Mm-hmm. At 2 a.m., he gathered the Heartbreakers to join him in re-recording the song. Their final take was 7 to 8 minutes long, but it was pared down to 2 minutes, 39 seconds on the album. Guests on the song's recording include guitarist Jeff Jordan, a common collaborator with the band in the early days, with Phil Seymour, who sings backing vocals.
Hey guys, I know it's 2 a.m., but I have this great idea. Can you come over to the studio right now?
Grace Jones. You guys know ever Grace Jones?
Yes.
She did a reggae version of it.
Huh?
Interesting.
Very cool.
Yes. So
I've actually heard that one before, and then I listened to it, and then I just want to live on my life.
What do you got, Lily?
So here's my blatant edition of Iron Maiden in every show as I do. Number of the Beast. It originally was on as the seventh single on the 1982 studio album, but in 1985 took a backseat to the live version of it. 1985's Live After Death. It is one of the best live metal records of all time. Bruce Dickinson is at his best and includes the double guitar attack of Dave Murray and Adrian Smith. Seems to be more powerful in front of a crowd. This one I only hear on Sirius. Unfortunately, I don't ever hear it on the radio. They always play the studio version on the radio. But you would like it better. I've seen it live. It was reissued in 2005 and also prior to that in 1990 in the first 10 years box set CD, 12-inch vinyl. It is one of the most popular songs that they do, and it was influenced by the 1978 movie Damien Omen 2, which is about a 13-year-old Antichrist. Although everyone says it has nothing to do with the devil, apparently there's this rumor going around that they did experience some paranormal kind of weirdness during the recording of it, so who knows if that's true, but they say it's not true.
What?
Yeah. What?
Come again?
That's a
Woo-hoo!
Oh, boy. Boy.
All right, good pick, Lily. What do you got, Pittsburgh Kevin?
Maybe.
Oh.
I'm amazed. Maybe I'm amazed by Paul McCartney.
Never heard of it.
No.
Oh, so there's this, that's two. There was this guy. He was in a band called The Beatles.
Oh,
the Beatles.
They
may have heard
of
them.
Yeah, broke up. He did a lot.
Ruddles.
So Maybe I'm Amazed is a song written by English musician. I'm like, is that who he is? All right, Paul McCartney. That was first released in his 1970 debut album, McCartney. It was actually never released as a single, the studio version. But the live performance by McCartney's later band, Wings, from the live album Wings Over America, was released as a single. It was released in 1977. The version became a top 10 hit in the United States and reached number 28 in the United Kingdom. So there you go. So yeah,
it's a great song.
I've heard both versions, but the live has got to be the best. And the first solo is Paul McCartney. He played the first solo in the song.
It's very now I've heard this too. It's very Let It Be, yeah. And I've heard that. Although people think that's George Harrison, that's actually Paul McCartney playing the solo on Let It Be. Oh. I've heard. They listen to both the solos. It's very, his solo in Maybe I'm Amazed is really
okay.
Let It Be-ish. It's got the same kind of licks and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if that's true, but I have heard people say that. Next that could time, be like a conspiracy theory.
Next time I talk to Paul, I'll ask him. I'll keep you updated.
He's coming over tomorrow.
I'll come down.
We're gonna drop acid with the Beatles.
Hello, Lily.
Bought up the crumpets, good boy.
I have so many, and I just don't know what I should. Which one? There's one I'm kind of holding back. I don't know why I'm holding back. I'm just gonna say it. Okay, I'm gonna do this one right here. Okay. This is a song. Now, this isn't a super, super big hit, but it had a big MTV video.
Yeah.
It's called I Don't Remember by Peter Gabriel.
Yeah.
It's got the people all painted in white. It's a kind of creepy, like Shock the Monkey thing going on, too. Yes. It's in the same sort of era. And it's a very cool song, originally released on his third solo album, though iterations of the song have been performed live or a couple before that. But the live single version was actually released in support of Play's live album. That said, it's not exactly the same version as a Play's live album. It's a single mix, slightly sped up, less crowd noise, and extended instrumental outro. Song was written by Peter Gabriel and co-produced by Peter Walsh at Shabby Road Studios in Bath. So it does not sound live. And if you haven't heard the song in a while, go back and listen to it. It's the production is
so good.
It's stunning.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the song, you hear the crowd going, you're like, what, that's live? And it is live. It just sounds absolutely freaking amazing. It's a very simple band with let me see, who's playing on it? Jerry Amarada is playing drums, percussion, and doing some background vocals. Tony Levin is playing the Chapman stick. You guys know what that is?
Wow.
David Rhodes is playing the guitar and doing some backing vocals. Synthesizer and piano by Larry Fast, and synthesizer piano vocals by Peter Gabriel. So they're all, now there was probably gone back in and come things added in the studio and stuff, but it's really freaking tight. It's really, really together. So if you've never heard it or haven't heard it in a long time, it's one of those songs that you're probably going, I don't know the song, but if you heard the song, you're like, I know the song. But I Don't Remember by Peter Gabriel. I just remember seeing it on in my buddy's house on MTV, and we're watching it, and then the song ends, and you're the crowd, and we're like, what?
Wait,
that's
that
freaking live?
What's that noise?
And it's just like, it's just
applause?
Sick. I mean, it's just absolutely sick.
Wow.
Do you know that song, Keith? I Don't Remember by Peter Gabriel?
Vaguely.
Okay.
I mean, that's a heavyweight. That's a heavyweight lineup. If you're playing with Peter Gabriel, you can't be a chump. So, yeah, that's a. I'm sure I heard. I'd have to probably revisit it.
The second you heard it, you would know it. But go ahead, go ahead, buddy. What do you got?
Well, this song was put out on our first record. In that, I'm gonna throw that in there once in a while, a little Pittsburgh accent, just to make them. Just to make everybody know where I'm from. But this album was pretty low budget, and this version of the song, the studio version, sounded pretty low budget. But when they put it out on their Live in New York acoustic album, About a Girl sounded a lot better, and Nirvana had a song that probably was before their height of their popularity come back to popularity, and you hear this About a Girl Live in New York along with a lot of the other songs, even some of the cool covers they do, David Bowie and other stuff. But now All Apologies is another one I hear a lot of the acoustic versions, but About a Girl seems to be the song that got a really good crowd response, and it was a song that like I said was on Bleach.
Yep.
Which was made for I think $600.
Yeah.
But and it sounds like it. But About a Girl is a song that it was on an album before they really broke. So it was kind of a song they kind of made famous again, we'll say. You know, so I don't know what kind of response it had when it on Bleach. I never even knew who Nirvana was till Nevermind. So I mean, so that's a song that came back from that album. And
I didn't. I thought it was only something on their acoustic record. I did not know that until I started playing with the Nirvana tribute band, and they gave me the studio version. I was like, it's electric. It's the same song. The guitar solo is the same. It's all the same.
Yeah, it's not anything different. There's a different drummer on it.
Yes, yeah.
That's not Dave Grohl on Bleach. That's Chad Channing, I believe. Who I think just took my order down Chick-fil-A before.
Chick-fil-A Chad. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What do you got, Lily?
Oh, let me see here. My brain hurts. Oh. Okay, so I actually have Seek and Destroy from Metallica, which, you know, I'm not a Metallica fan. I'm not a huge one anyway.
Seek and Destroy!
I do. I definitely gave them more props after seeing them live. And the one song I do love from Kill 'Em All 1983, Seek and Destroy. It's their live version of it is so much better because you can feel the energy in it. You can, like, whether you're sitting at the show or in your living room or wherever it is, in bathroom, bedroom, whatever it is you're doing.
Why'd you look at me when you said bathroom?
I don't know, because I wanted to. the crowd and the song itself, it's usually played as the encore and is a highlight at the shows. The album you're going to want to look at for this one is Live Shit, Binge and Purge. For an example of what I'm talking about, if you don't know the live version, if you're not a huge fan of Metallica like me, I
yes,
and there's that. But it is from Kill 'Em All, which was their debut studio album, and it was also featured on the demo No Life Till Leather.
No Life Till Leather.
Yep.
Wow. That's a good title. Hellbent for leather.
That was their little EP demo, little demo. Mm.
And my sister and I actually have the nickname Seek and Destroy.
Yeah, I have one. If you need it. I know you've got a bunch.
Give us your last one.
Real quick one. Do You Feel Like We Do?
Oh.
Peter Frampton.
Well, you might as well also mention which song that Lily actually mentioned when she talked about Freebird. Show Me the Way.
Right.
Those are both same album. Yep.
Yeah, because it did. Well, Show Me the Way did not do well when it came out of the studio. And I don't know if it was the producer or his agent to say, you know, when you do the live album, give it another shot. Give it another shot. And sure enough, that turned out. So Do You Feel Like We Do, a song by Peter Frampton, originally filmed on Frampton's Camel, released in 1973. But it really came alive. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Oh, darn it. Oh, my God. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
See, that's the spur of the moment. There you go. It was
Keith's exasperated. Poor Keith. He's like, why did he agree to come back on this?
Just go back to Tuesdays. Just go back. You know, if it's exactly. But it really came into its own in 1976 on Frampton Comes Alive.
Sorry.
And, like, you never hear the studio version.
No.
No, never.
Same way with Show
Me the Way.
You
probably never hear the fucking live version either, because you know why? Because it's fucking Peter Frampton, but that's a horror thing. Go ahead.
Oh, come on now, dude. He's got, like, Parkinson's disease. Come on, man. Yeah.
I'm not talking about him right now, Lou. I mean, I don't sit there and talk shit on Michael J. Fox. He was on Family Ties, but he's, you know, he's shaking like a goddamn milkshake.
He doesn't need the guitar anymore, then.
Come on, though.
His number one fan.
Really? You're not a Peter Frampton fan?
No, some bands and artists just get on my nerves. I mean, no one even mentioned my last one, but I sucked it up and put it on my list for whatever reason.
Well,
Say it.
It's probably the most popular live version of any song ever, other than Freebird, which is freaking Rock and Roll All Night.
That's why
and I party every on mine. Day, which I was just I subjected to play in a band like last month, and I literally vomited in my mouth the entire time I was playing.
Did it taste good at least? Did you at least have whiskey or bourbon before you peed?
Of course I did. The other day I cut myself shaving and Maker's Mark came out of my pores. So
it's more tolerable at least.
Wow.
Yeah, but it's on a list and, you know, people love it, so I just suck it up and play it, you know.
It was a song that was released on Dress to Kill.
Yeah.
See what I know, my Kiss.
Look at you.
I have it on my list.
And
I guarantee every one of you had it on your list.
Oh, yeah. And it was just, it just kind of, but when they did that live album, which isn't really live.
Right.
It's pretend live.
Pretend live.
But let's face it.
Yeah, I mean, they really did. You know what I'm talking about.
Gene and Paul really downplay it.
Holy shit.
I mean, I think we talked about
Ace and Peter were like, they were literally told the story. They were sitting in the lounge and the studio musicians were coming out and they go, how'd it go? He goes, oh, that's the best you ever sounded. He's like, yeah, man, give me another beer.
Woo!
They were like, fuck it. We don't care. I'm going to get paid. Yeah,
Ace
it'd be good.
Thinks it's his best work ever. And I mean, he's drunk half the time. So
I want to hit a couple real quick as kind of like, you know, because we're kind of running out of time. Life During Wartime from Stop Making Sense. That's the more popular version of that song, although there is a studio.
That's a great version. I don't even give a shit about studio version. That live version is effing awesome.
Twist and Shout by the Beatles.
That's,
okay.
Yeah.
The Beatles.
Was that the Hamburger Club?
Yeah.
What was the place called?
The Cavern Club. Cavern Club.
That's right. The Hamburger Club. Hamburg. Frankfurt.
Hamburg. It was in Hamburg. Okay, there was a hamburger. It was all right. Enough with the hamburgers.
That's where that was. That was the Lord of Sandwich that lived there.
Earl. It's an Earl of Sandwich.
Earl has nothing to do with this. The Lord in the sandwich. And Earl, what the hell does Earl have to do with this?
I don't know. I just like the name Earl.
It was the Earl of Sandwich, but okay. No Woman, No Cry by Bob Marley.
Yes, I like that.
Yes.
Okay, and now here's two. Here's two that this for okay. Tears in Heaven by Eric Clapton. I believe the unplugged acoustic version is the more popular.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But here's one. Some people don't
Layla.
Exactly. Some people don't even know there's a rock electric version of Layla. A lot of people think that the version is the acoustic. There's many people who don't even know the original version. Do you know that? I've talked people who were like, millennials.
That's crazy to me too, though.
They don't even know. They don't even know, Keith.
They know that acoustic blues shuffle version, which is nowhere near as good as the fucking studio version, man. That studio version's epic. That piano breakdown in the middle is, come on, no?
Yep. Yeah. I mean, but there's people that just don't even know that exists. They think that it's the acoustic version to them, you know, because it was so popular. I mean, my God, they still play the shit out of it. I'm like,
I will literally gut you like a fish if you call me a millennial again.
I have to turn the channel when that comes on. I'm like, I could be rocking out to the gray stuff, and that comes on, I gotta put something else on. I can't deal with that.
Bing.
I'll make my own sound effects.
Yeah, girl.
See?
That's exactly what I do. Do you guys want to know what happened in rock today?
Oh, please.
Did something happen with the Beatles?
Well, the first person.
All night.
John Lennon married Cynthia Powell at Liverpool's Mount Pleasant Register office.
Oh, that was nice.
Was it a justice of the peace? She was knocked up.
Well,
he was. She was knocked up with Julian.
Oh, nice.
Rolling Stones appeared on UK TV show Ready, Steady, Go for the first time. But something interesting about the – I wanted to point out when I said Twist and Shout. The Beatles and the Stones released covers. They were both – and they both played – I mean, they both played where, like, did a lot of covers. It was like it was a total thing when they – at the beginning of their career. 66, on their final tour of America, the Beatles performed at Shea Stadium in New York City. Unlike the previous year's performance, which had sold out, there were 11,000 empty seats.
What?
That's kind of
the funny. Beatles earned more than the previous year, receiving $189,000 for their performance. Could you imagine, Keith, $189,000 in 1966 dollars?
Here, let's do some math.
That's
hold on. Lily's on it.
That's pretty impressive. I would say that I don't make that ever in my entire lifetime. So that's pretty good, yeah.
Okay, there's like set literally like seven Beatles things on the thing. I'm not going to do them
of
all.
Of course there are.
Enjoying a wild birthday party, Keith Moon, yeah, drummer for The Who, yeah, drove his Lincoln car into a Holiday Inn swimming pool.
Oops. My man, Moon the Loon. Hook it up. Hook
As
it up,
the party
Keith.
Had become out of control, the police were called to put an end to the festivities.
The party became out of control as soon as Moon was invited to it. That's what happened.
Okay, yeah. I have the... It's $2,461,479.
One performance.
Wow. That's the freaking Beatles. They can do what they want. Moon, ever keen to avoid the boys in blue, snuck outside and got into a Lincoln Continental limousine and attempted to make a getaway. Unfortunately, in his inebriated state, he released the handbrake and began rolling towards the pool. Moon simply sat back and waited as the car crashed into the fence, around the pool, and into the water.
Yikes.
That's my Friday night.
That's your Friday night.
That man is legendary for so many of the wrong reasons, you know what I mean?
Wow, sir.
I feel like we talked a lot about his fun times.
Oh, my goodness gracious. During a North American tour, the Jimi Hendrix Experience on this day appeared at a Singer Bowl, Flushing Meadow Park, New York.
In Flushing.
Yeah, strange. Also on the bill was Soft Machine, Big Brother, and the Holding Company. Nice. Might not be a bad lineup. On this day, 1969, Mr. Johnny Cash. Oh, I'm Johnny Cash. Number one on the U.S. album chart with Johnny Cash at San Quentin. Yep. Critically acclaimed, commercially successful at Folsom Prison was a previous live album.
Crazy
hit.
That we talked about that, huh?
I know, right? Yeah.
Diana Ross was at number one on the U.K. single chart, I'm Still Waiting, in 1971. Yep. On this day in 1980, David Bowie was number one on the UK chart with Ashes to Ashes, his second UK number one, taken from the Scary Monsters and Super Creeps album. The song, do you, any guys know this song at all? I don't know it, but it was big in the UK.
All right.
Ashes to Ashes, you don't know that one?
I do not know that one.
Huh.
Do you know it? Can you sing it?
Ashes to ashes, dust to dust, something else after that. That's a quirky little like synth thing in the beginning. Yeah, I bet you it's one of them songs that will trade places on the other song, the Peter Gabriel song. If I hear it, you said I would know it. If you hear this one, maybe you'll know it.
Ashes to
it doesn't sound like that.
That would be great if it did.
If Keith went, that's it!
Oh, there you go. Yeah, yeah, I remember that.
That would have been
it's exactly what it is.
Oh, I lost. Oh, here, this day in music. Okay, we're done with Diana Ross. Let's hit some birthdays.
Saw a good one there.
I know you did.
No, if Kiplinger's hold now.
It's one of your woman's men. So there's that.
What?
Okay, Keith Moon was born this day in 1946.
No way.
Yes, oh, well, there you go.
The same day he was his birthday, apparently, when he drove the Lincoln.
Well, you know. Know what the party was for.
Makes a lot of sense now.
I was going to say, I thought the party was just because it was Tuesday, but now it makes sense now.
Are either one? Is anybody here familiar with Richard Thompson and Fairport Convention?
No.
Richard Thompson's a dynamite guitar player. Anyways, him and his wife have been in everything together. It's Linda Thompson's birthday. Oh. You know, when I was in 1981, you know what I wanted more than anything else? I wanted Jesse's girl.
Oh, that's who I met, Keith.
What?
Rick Springfield.
Happy birthday, Rick Springfield.
Where at? Prison. Where's he at?
It's his birthday.
It's his birthday.
I thought you said you met him.
That's what I thought you said, too. That's who I met. Yeah.
Oh, I've met him before.
Yeah, he does cons.
No. He does fairs.
Fairs.
Oh, at least
yeah. He did Gretna Fest a couple years ago. I had dinner reservations. Samantha let me sit there for 2 hours to watch a bunch of this at Rick Springfield, so she could touch his shirt.
That's awesome.
Happy birthday, Dean DeLeo, the guitarist with the Stone Temple Pilots.
Yes, sir.
Yep. Oh,
they're actually touring this year.
Mark Avsec. Do you guys know who Mark Avsec is?
I do now. That
keyboardist, songwriter with the band Donny Iris and the Cruisers.
Get icon.
Shit, no way. Now he's working down a pants in that.
He's all washed up.
He's all washed up.
And he also played on Play That Funky Music with Wild Cherry. There aren't a lot of great Cure players apparently in Pittsburgh at that time. So. Oh my goodness.
That is something to, you could always say that you are worth something, and everybody has 15 minutes of fame. I'm still waiting on mine, but it'll come eventually.
But it's going to be good, Keith.
Who's here?
Who Andy Warhol, such a liar.
Yeah. Is anybody here familiar with Crazy Town?
I've interviewed them.
Shifty Shellshock, after born to stay in 1974.
Shifty does stuff solo that I prefer to Crazy Town.
Huh.
Crazy Town. That's a band that's about Cannonsburg, Crazy Town, right?
Basically.
I don't wonder what his parents would think when they named him that, you know?
Shifty. You guys have problems.
All right, Chris and you, Shifty.
Okay, this is the time in the show where one more time I say go to LudiniRockAndRollCircus.com, go to LulumbardiMusic.com.
Yeah.
There's a lot of great stuff, a lot of freebies signed up. We've got a new contest coming up for our album.
What?
So we're going to be getting an album. Plus, those of you who, plus we got some other cool stuff. I can't say, I'm at liberty to say everything. Shout out to Wolf's Customs. Go to wolfscustoms.online. RockRageRadio.com is where you can check out the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus, as well as what else, Lily?
Hot Licks with Lily 6, Thursdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. You can download the app for free or just go to rockrageradio.com.
And stream. Stream! Keith the Hawk Hawkins, we haven't heard from you in a few months, so anything you want to tell us about or update us on with anything going on with Ugly?
Yeah, I'll be at the with Ugly, I'll be at the Juke Joint on Friday, which is in Ocean Springs, Mississippi.
I love the name.
And then where else? Sunday I'm playing Ugly's playing a podcast in Slidell, Louisiana, but it will be broadcast on, I think, Facebook after that on a Wednesday. It's called Behind the Mic. So it's like a live interview, two songs, and on your way. So we'll see what happens
there.
It should
be
interesting.
Man. Good. Awesome.
Cool. That's Behind the Mic. Then Friday at the Juke Joint from probably roughly 9 o'clock. You know, it's always subject to change in Mississippi. They just, you know, they're not into time there, man.
Okay.
It's not a throwback dish, you know.
Time. You're not into the whole, you know.
I'm not into that whole time thing. Yeah.
El Deuterino, if you're not in the whole brevity thing, you know.
Yeah, you know, you can start at like, you guys can start whenever you want. Let's start maybe 8:39, 9:15, you know, something like that.
Okay, guys, there you have it. And you can, like I said, one more time, LudiniRockAndRollCircus.com or LulumbardiMusic.com. That will get you in the loop there for prizes, giveaways, and a lot of fun stuff that is coming down the road for you guys. Next week, we will be discussing, pay attention, the most covered songs in rock and metal. And when there's probably a lot there, but think about the ones that are really like, everybody has a version of fill in the blank.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Got you.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, so I may, maybe some of these might be some songs that are on this list. I don't know.
We'll see.
I don't know. That'd be real easy. We just keep these notes.
Yeah.
Just show up next week.
I always start fresh.
Blitzed out of our minds. But no, there are songs that are like really heavily, just to give you like an idea.
Hammered.
What?
They're hammered into the ground. They're beaten.
Just to give you an idea, at one time yesterday by the Beatles was like one of the most covered songs of all time. Everybody was doing a cover of it because it was like a beautiful song.
Good.
And
it's pretty good.
Yeah, you know, people, you know, who were good singers wanted to have a chance at like trying to show off what they could do, you know, with it vocally and stuff like that. So there's a set of songs out there that are just like, and I don't mean played by bar bands. That's not what I'm talking about. Okay,
meaning real bands.
Well, like they've released it and maybe tried to put it out as a single, etc. Okay, guys, so we'll handle that next week, and you guys have a great week, and we'll catch you all on the next Ludini Rock and Roll Circus.
See ya.